Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky, and I am the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I am now honored to introduce Nicole Osborne, as she will be introducing this morning's speaker. Nicole Osborne is a research analyst at Syracuse University, where she supports philanthropic engagement opportunities for her alma mater. As a young alumni leader, Nicole's approach is be orange that you want to see in the world, which is exemplified in her role as membership coordinator of the Generation Orange Leadership Council. Nicole is also the chair of the board of directors for Inkululeko, a nonprofit organization serving students in Makanda, South Africa. It is here that she bridges her passions for education, technology, and development while addressing post-apartheid inequities. Please join me in welcoming Nicole Osborne.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. So today I am introducing Zuku Avama. He was born in the rural eastern province of South Africa. And for as long as he can remember, he's been interested in supporting the development of the African child. Zuku describes his childhood and his path through life in this way. I went from a mud house to a shack, and from a shack to a flat. He attended high school in Hammondsdorp and went on to study at Nelson Mandela University in Port Elizabeth, where he majored in psychology. He then went on to earn an honors degree from Rhodes University. Zuku has been working with Inkululeko as an academic lead. In this role, he supports learners with tutoring and in connecting them with resources in the community. He remarks often that Inkululeko is bigger than we think. It's doing so much more than I can tell you for these young people. Please join me in welcoming Zuku.
Morning, everyone. Morning. You'll forgive me, I'm old school. I'm from Africa, so bear with me. To the university, the faculties that are here, departments, the professors, the lecturers, the member of staff, the student body, if there is any student body here, and then the community at large, I greet you all. Molweni Nonke. I'm a Xhosa speaker. So when I say Molweni, I say hi. Yeah. Firstly, I would like to thank the organizers of this gathering for giving me an opportunity to come and speak. As the speakers has introduced me, my name is Zuku Luyanda Gadavama. I know with my surname, it's a mountain to climb for other people to pronounce my surname. So it's Gadavama, yes, yeah. I'm born and bred the rural areas of Lusikisiki in Eastern Cape, South Africa. And I work with Inkululeko as a resource development coordinator. Bear with me, I'm nervous. But as we go along, we get used to each other, and then I can talk freely. Back home, they call me an African child. The reason why they call me an African child is because of the zeal I have for the advancement of an African child, especially in academic space or community development. I'm very passionate about that. When I say African child, I speak in general and about a black African child in particular, because they've been disadvantaged in the past because of the back then system called apartheid. I feel so young here. I'm 24 years old. And you'll know that as a 24-year-old in South Africa, you are classified as a born free. which means I was born after the apartheid system or apartheid government. And others, they would, when they reprimand us as children, they will say, "You're the lost generation." I haven't figured out or understand correctly what they mean when they say we're the lost generation. I'm in the group of born freeze, but I'm yet to find out about that. That is me, and as the speaker has said, I studied at NMMU. I majored in psychology, and then I went to Rhodes. Rhodes is in Grahamstown, which is now called Makanda. It's no longer Grahamstown. We are trying to decolonize. Now it's called Makanda, one of our heroes who was prisoned in Robben Island. And then there's a very interesting story about Makanda, which Grahamstown is named after now. But I think that story is a story for another day. For now, let's continue with the business of the day. So as the speaker said, I'm involved with Inkululeko, and maybe most of you, they don't know what Inkululeko is or what the word Inkululeko means. The word means, it's a Sixhosa word, means freedom. And we are a nonprofit organization. So we are in the after-school space. When I say in the after-school space, we're in the academic space, but mainly operating after classes, you know. So what is Inkululeko? No, most of you are asking, what is this Inkululeko that he's talking about, this African guy? Inkululeko, as I said, is a nonprofit organization that focuses on academic support for learners. We have two major programs that we run. The first program being the academic support. So in the academic support sector, we have other programs. We have tutoring, we have mentoring, we have career guidance, we have metric program, and we have psychosocial program within that program, academic support program. And then secondly, we have our social enterprise sector, which is there we have our Common Ground Cafe, and then the business programs, the accounting skills programs, entrepreneurial programs within that program. So maybe wondering, listing so many programs here, what's going on? The academic support, basically, the tutoring, we offer a tutoring to school learners from grade 8 to grade 12 from different schools in Makanda. I think currently we are working with plus minus four schools, high schools, from grade 8 to grade 12. So we offer them supplementary tutoring, where we work with Rhodes University Community Engagement Office. They provide us with volunteers, the volunteers who become the tutors of our learners. And then we also work with Syracuse University. I'm so happy to be here with the coordinator. They've done so much work for us as Inkululeko through the study abroad program. And we really appreciate your support in an advancement of an African child. The second program that I mentioned, which is mentoring, we also get volunteers from Rhodes University. You'll forgive us, we work hand in hand with the Rhodes University because, they are capacitated to make our vision realized as Inkululeko organization. So they also provide us with mentors for our learners. So our learners, they have mentors from Rhodes through Rhodes Community Engagement Office. And then we also work with other student societies. where there will be like the, some business student societies, some law student societies. So we get students there, final year students, others like postgrad students to come and mentor our learners. Especially our matrics, which is grade 12, they are the seniors. Then there is career guidance where we take our learners to open days, the career university career days, so that they will acquire more about the post-matric opportunities or university opportunities, where they will ask about the courses and anything that they would like to do after matric. Let's say if they want to be, let's say, a lawyer, and then during those open days, they will ask more about law and they get guidance, like which subjects they need to do more or to do well in, so that they can get into law degrees and other degrees as well. And then the other program that I mentioned, which is the matric program. The matrics, I don't know whether you guys this side, you're familiar with them, but the matrics is like the senior phase of high school, the last year where you are there, you are prepared to go to university. So it's the last grade before you get to higher learning institution, be it university, college, or any other higher learning institution trainings that are there. This matric program, we deal specifically with our matrics, which means now we are preparing them for higher learning institution. And then others, let us be realistic, not in South Africa, not every matric student will graduate or pass matric and get to higher learning institutions, because you find out that only 2%, it's said, only 2% learners that pass matric that are able to get to higher learning institutions. Only 2%, black to be specific, only 2% because of financial constraints. Others, they don't even have information, like I didn't have information. I think with me, I was lucky that I was a top student in high school, so I was given that priority. So if there are university application forms, then my LO teacher, life orientation teacher, will give me, and then they will pay for it. I didn't even know how university looks like, what is expected. You know, growing up in rural areas in South Africa, you go to school just to pass matric and get work in the mines or as a security. I didn't have, although yeah, some of like my parents, some of the learners who come from rich families, they will tell you that after matric I'm going to varsity, and then you know that you don't have money, so why would you think about varsity? But the help of my teachers, they made it possible for me to get to university, study psych and graduate, and then later on do honors at Rhodes, which is, I was one of the few fortunate. Yeah. But that came with hardships also, but that's the topic for another day. Yeah. So the other program, as I mentioned, the social enterprise program, and then we have Common Ground Cafe where we sell food. So we sell food so that the learners can, that social enterprise sector, the main objectives of it is for our learners, because they are studying or learning business studies in high school and there's no practical component. So they need, within that social enterprise, then they are exposed to the practical side of doing business, like counting stock. Those who are doing accounting, I mean, they'll know, I don't know accounting, but I know there's CPJ, CRJ, and you know, the income statement, all those things. So they get to do it practical. And then the money that we generate from the Common Ground Cafe, and then it supports the organization, especially the academic sector or the academic support side. And also to sustain the organization, because it's a nonprofit organization, so we rely on funders, and sometimes we do get funding, sometimes we don't. So this is a way of sustaining the organization, because the organization is trying by all means to advance an African child. When I say an African child, to advance the community of Black people, to be specific in particular, but everyone, because there are so limited opportunities for a child from the locations. I don't know what you call locations here.
Urban areas.
Urban areas, yeah, for urban areas, a child from an urban areas, they have like limited opportunities to get to higher learning institution, even to get opportunities, especially if they don't have like metrics. So now we are trying by all means to make sure that they get to grade 12, the metric, and then they pass metric. So these programs are trying to help them. So they are supplementing the schools that are in place and teaching those learners. So yeah, those are the programs that we have. And then, as I always say, the organization is bigger than what we think and what we can understand and imagine, because the other program that I mentioned, which is psychosocial program, it deals, so we are working with the Rhodes again, Rhodes Psychology Department, and then they give us their honors and the master's students, and then those students, then they come and offer basic like lay counseling like skills, like programs where our learners now they get to open up, because if you've been to Africa, you understand, specific in South Africa, in Makanda, you understand the social illnesses that are happening there. So our learners, they don't only struggle with academics. There are also other social illnesses that they struggle with, like the rape, the abuse, and recently depression is on steroids. So learners are committing suicide left, right, and center. So the psychosocial programs, they are trying by all means to make sure that the learners, they are supported, like in terms of their psychosocial needs. Because you find out that a kid will be coming to our program maybe hungry, you know, maybe there's no food at home, and then that makes the child not to concentrate in class. And then if you don't concentrate in class, you'll fail. If you don't fail, you won't get the matric certificate, you won't get hired, you won't get to higher learning institutions so that you can change the situation or you can get better opportunities. So that's the realities that our learners are facing. So hence we're having these different programs so that they can acquire skills, so that they can be equipped not only for the academics, but the after post-matric life, so that they can be able to get work after matric. And those that maybe didn't get to matric and then find opportunities, because finding opportunities for them or with them, and then that will mean that the society will be improved. Because now, if they don't find any opportunities, they'll be sitting home, doing drugs, getting up to no good. And then that reflects back to society that is already in crisis of the social inequalities. So yeah, the organization is doing bigger things than we can imagine, you know? And you know, just a story of one of I call them my kids, our learners, because I really love them, and then they are just beautiful. And then whenever I see them, I see a brighter future. I see people that maybe we can get the next Mandela from them. And yeah, I'm really positive that they can reach greater heights. So one of my kids came to me this other day, and then she was like, Buti is like a brother, and it's a Xhosa word, you know. Buti, I'm really, really, really thankful of the opportunity or of the work that you're doing, because when I joined Inkululeko, I was not doing well academically, not because I'm dumb or I'm not equipped enough. Let's say I'm not intelligent. simply because there are so many issues at home, you know, being abused. You know, a situation whereby a child will be abused by a family member and then keep quiet about it because there's actually nothing. The person who's supposed to support you, to protect you, is the same person who's abusing you. And then when she got to the program and then psychosocial program and then got to talk about what was troubling her, at least she managed to improve her marks, and then we tried to link them with other stakeholders that might be of help in such situations. So the organization is really, really doing a great job. I pray that people who supports us as Inkululeko one day can get an opportunity to go to South Africa and see how they've been helping us, because really we are making a difference, not only in the academic space or in the after-school program space, but in the community as well, because we're a staff of five. So one of our staff members were the learners, which means they were the learners in the program of Inkululeko. So can you see, from being the benefiter to being the benefactor, you know, because they were benefiting from the program, and then now they are working for the organization, so they are giving back. So we promote that, because that is assisting the community in community development, and in making sure that we change Makanda, we change South Eastern Cape, we change South Africa, and we change Africa as a whole. You know, who knew that Mandela, from a very rural area, Kunu, one day will be a world icon, someone that is respected in the whole world. So now that Mandela is no more, so we cannot be the generation, as the born-free generation, the generation that will sit down and say, no, Mandela liberated us, he gave us the freedom, and then we can just sit and relax and enjoy. Whereas there are so many social illnesses or social inequalities, injustices that are taking place in our communities, whereas there's so many opportunities that we can advance the life of an African child, so that one day, I always say, an African child will not be naked forever, which is whatever that is troubling an African child, it won't be forever. One day I dream of an African continent that can be able to stand on its own, having its own development without relying to the international community for donations and for assistance and for, but through these programs that we are running, then it's a green light that one day we are creating a generation, we are grooming a generation that will be able to stand on its own. Other than when I was still going to church, I still go to church, by the way. My pastor will say that there is a story in the Bible, I think it's Acts 3, if I'm not mistaken, there was a crippled man. Apparently, the man was crippled from birth, and then people, they would pass and give him some silver, some coins, and then get in the temple. But there are two guys that came, which is they're with Jesus, and then they just told the man that with hope and faith, and then he is healed, and then he can take his mat and go inside. And the man just stood up and went on the temple and jumping and rejoicing. So I really pray of a day where an African child will be able to not sit on the beautiful gate as a crippled man and be offered, you know, silvers and gold, will be supported and be groomed and be built and be empowered, so that an African child can be able to stand on his own and do whatever that needs to be done, you know. That is not only for the benefit of an African continent only, but for the benefit of the world, because the world will be able to do its own things without worrying about an African child that is disadvantaged, you know. So, yeah. So those things that I wanted to talk about, to share. And then in closing, as Inkululeko, which we say freedom comes hope, and we believe in freedom, and we believe in liberating an African child and advancing our communities, especially in Makanda, where we are based. Kwame Nkrumah once said or talked about freedom, and he said, I quote, freedom is not something that one people can bestow on another as a gift, you know. He said that freedom, it has to be claimed as their own. People, they need to claim it as their own. So for them not to lose it, or for it not to be kept away from them. So with those words, I thank you, and yeah, thank you so much.
So we're just going to open it up for some questions now.
Thank you for coming. I'm interested in how you and Nicole connected, and what are you doing together to make this move forward?
Okay. You'll take the question?
I can say the first part.
Yeah.
So I, like Emily said, I graduated from Syracuse University in 2014. And Zuku mentioned the partnership with SU Abroad that we've had for the last 8 years. So I studied abroad in South Africa, visited Makanda, then Grahamstown. And then once I graduated, I wanted to give back. And that's when I became a board member in 2016. And so that's my connection. Zuku's an employee. I'm the board chair. Does that answer your question? Okay. And then if you want to share why you're here in Syracuse.
Okay, I'm here to attend the symposium, which is the Snow Innocent on the other side of the womb. I think it's taking place at New House. Yeah, it's taking place at New House on the 28th of this month. I hope to see you all there. Yeah, we'll be discussing the issues of inequality, privilege, yeah, and other issues that link us, the Syracuse, with South Africa, because apparently Makanda and Syracuse, they share similar struggles. There is a common struggles between Makanda and Syracuse, so we will be talking about that, unpacking that, so that we move forward with resolutions of how do we then make sure that we, moving forward, we address these issues or these struggles that we find ourselves.
Thank you so much for the work you do. It's really important, and I think it's wonderful. I just have a logistics question. How involved are the parents in your program?
Program, all right. Parents are very involved, you know, because even with the application, the learners from different schools, they apply to the organization. So we cannot just accept learners and say, come, and we work with you without first having parents signing on the application form, the consent that they are aware of the organization and they've read the terms and conditions, what needs to happen, and yeah, so they are very involved. Before I came, actually, we had a meeting with parents, and they were very excited about this year and then the goals that we have as the organization this year. Yeah, so they are very involved.
You mentioned the young girl who told you how important the organization was to her because she's abused at home. What can you do to prevent that abuse at home?
The abuse at home.
What do you do?
It is so unfortunate or fortunate that what is happening at home, we cannot deal with it, or we cannot be directly involved. But when it comes to abuse, I mean, we are very clear about that. Then definitely we have to involve the relevant stakeholders. In South Africa, you've got your social development, you've got your FAMSA, all those organizations, they deal with such cases so that the families can stay in peace and in harmony. So we refer, we work with different stakeholders, so we refer such cases to relevant stakeholders, because we are just an after-school program that is mainly, its focus is on the academics and other programs that support the academics for an advancement of an African child.
Hi, welcome to the U.S. I spent some time in South Africa under apartheid, and it was interesting to me that so many people of all different colors and races were very hospitable there. I was hitchhiking through. I just want to make a comment, I don't really have a question, that the current issue of Harper's Magazine has two articles about South Africa that focus on the inequity and the poverty there. I found them very interesting. The articles do not deal with the power structure, but they do help me anyway to understand some of what's really going on in South Africa for the great majority of the people.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for coming, appreciate it. You mentioned that only 2% of people get to go on to university. I wondered if there were equal opportunities between boys and girls to do that.
It varies, because for a matriculant, someone who just matriculated, which is graduated from high school, there are so many issues that that those people they face in terms of getting into higher learning institutions. One being the financial constraints. If you've watched, there was Fees Must Fall in 2015 and in 2016, and I'm proud to say I was part of that struggle where we're championing for the fees to fall, because we don't have money to go to higher learning institutions. So it depends. So if a boy child gets an opportunity or is rich or wealthy, and then she will go to higher learning institutions. And a boy child, if it's not, then he won't. So it's a probability, you know. Chances of going and chances of not. So we cannot say a boy child or a girl child, you know, will go to higher learning institutions. I don't know whether that answers your question. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. I have a question. So how many students does your program like service a year? And within your metrics, how many of them go to university?
Okay, thank you for the question. Previously, we used to have like less than 25 learners, which is from grade 8 to grade 12. But the number is growing because the organization is really doing great work. So the number is increasing. So this year, we wanted to have only 30 learners, but the learners are flocking. They want to join the organization. And then as we speak, I think we have plus minus close to 60 learners in the program. And then with metrics, previously we only had like 5 metrics, 6 metrics. 2017 were like 5 metrics, and then we got 100% pass rate, which is all of them, they pass. And then one got accepted to higher learning institution at Rhodes, and then others, they went to metric schools to upgrade their results, and then others, they went to colleges. And then, but those that were upgrading are at Rhodes now, so they are university students. So last year, we had like 6 learners, and again, we got 100% pass, which means all of them pass. And then one is at Rhodes, and then one is at college, and then others are upgrading their metric results. Yeah. So upgrading basically means that maybe you pass and then you didn't pass like with flying colors, and then you got your 40s or your 50s, and then now you want to improve that because there are programs who require maybe 80% or 90%. For instance, if you want to do a BSc or law, there are certain requirements that are needed. So now they are upgrading so that they will get those requirements and get to higher learning institution and do the course that they want to do.
One of the things that we are working on right now with a group of undergraduate students at the Maxwell School is to basically develop a student information system, right? So that we can actually have like through a mobile app, so it'll be like student input data or student inputted, so that we can have like a legitimate system to track learner progress and then like be able to have like a KIPP through college model, which is where, you know, like after they do graduate, or we can track like, okay, this person's at Rhodes, how are they doing? Doing the post-matric school, how are they doing? So we can actually have like the data to track year over year, because our program is really only like 11 or 12 years old. So, you know, we're building those systems and using the resources that we have.
Good morning. I believe you mentioned in the course of your remarks that this educational program or system or structure that you're working on might, in this set of students who don't have the opportunities that they should or they could take advantage of, discover or reveal the next Mandela. Certainly he was a singular force at a time in history, well, over many, many years. Well, such a person of such quality and ability and foresight and tenacity were to come forth out of this program, or frankly any program, what issue in the current South Africa do you think they would best put those talents to changing?
Can you please repeat the question?
Well, if there were a person of the qualities of Nelson Mandela who came, I mean, there's some similarity, and so now you have there is a person, male or female, who is able to deal with a defining social issue, and I'm not sure, I don't mean to understate it, were to come forth, and they had a presence in the South African political or social environment, what issue should they put those talents to try and resolve within that country currently?
All right, thank you for your question. Now your question wants me to wear my comrade cap. But I left politics, I was in politics before, but I left politics. But your question reminds me of while I was in politics and stuff. So basically, I think one of the issues that the someone who emerges, the next Nelson Mandela or as a new leader that needs to address, I think the issue of education, because if you follow the Fees Must Fall movement, you realize that there is more into the movement than the fees. And the issues that are addressed within the movement are the issues that, if they can be resolved, and then that can take the socioeconomic problems of South Africa to the next level, which is if ever we can get someone who can address the education problem in South Africa, then it is then we can be able to address the economic problem that we are having. Recently, I don't know whether you've heard, we've been ranked, you know, junk status by Moody's and other international raters because of what was happening, like the political issues like that were taking place there. So if we can get someone who will be able to value education so that the educated can deal with the economic, because our economy is not stable. It's not stable at all, but we have the resources, we have the capacity. It's just that we don't have that leader who can be able to stand firm and say, this is what needs to happen.
Hi there. Quick question. There's been such a wonderful partnership between Syracuse University and Nkululeko over the last
eight
years. I'm wondering if any of your students apply to Syracuse University, or if they don't, what's holding them back? Is it the financial or the snow?
Definitely not the snow. I mean, our learners will really appreciate coming inside an institution like, wonderful institution like Syracuse. I personally would like to study here. Yeah, but the finances are the biggest. In South Africa, when you speak about education, like educational challenges, the first thing that comes to mind, the finances, whether it's high school, but you've got your quantile one, which is the government, quantile one, two, three, the government is paying for those schools, like the school fees and the books and provide everything. And then you've got the quantile four and quantile five, which is the former multiracial schools. They are the private schools now. You've got quantile four being subsidized by government, and half of the fees are paid by the parents. And then we've got the private schools where parents, they pay all the fees. So there are still those class and privileges, those who go to private school. I mean, private school, we've got in Grahamstown, the private school, they are getting 100%. It's guaranteed. And then us, as in like the local schools, you know, getting only the 60s, others, they even getting 36% passing rate. So you can see that finances or financial constraint are the biggest problem. So coming to here, student like South African, our learners coming to Syracuse, like the finances are the biggest challenge so far, as far as I know. I don't know, maybe there's any other issues. Because we've got, like, one of the top students in the region, he's in top five, he was one of our learners. So we've got the brains and the capacity to apply to this international university, but now the finances.
Thanks for coming. You mentioned that some of the children may be challenged in achieving their education goals because they're hungry. And you mentioned that you're doing tutoring work with them. Have you explored providing them with meals in combination with their education? My church here in Syracuse packs 500,000 meals every year to send overseas to be provided to children at schools, so that they will continue to attend school and expand their opportunities. I think we partner with an organization called Feed My Starving Children. And I wondered if you had explored that opportunity of using a secure source of a steady meal as combined with the education to enhance the desire to attend your program.
We do provide, like, because we're an after-school program. So an after-school program, so we operate after school until a certain time. So we do provide meals, but with funds, you know, sometimes gets dry, so, and then there's no food, then the learners will just have to eat home. If there's no food at home, then we have to involve like the other stakeholders, like your social development and other charitable organizations that assist with that. So we do explore such opportunities, and I would really like us to have a chat after, so that I can hear more about the opportunity that you just presented.
Hi, just wanted to get Rhodes University is one of the top universities in the country. Well-resourced, but it was one of the most inaccessible institutions for people of color, particularly Africans, and the president of the university took a significant part of his salary to pay for the fees of this local student from the local community, so as they can afford to come into Rhodes. And another one of the things he was saying is that depends on the amount of money you have. The more money you have, the better education you will get. If you go into public school like the kids is talking about, they do have a feeding program during the day, but the class average, when I was teaching at the time, it was probably you would have about 50 students per class,
even
one
more.
Teacher and 50 students. And there's just no way you can attend to all of them. I'm shocked that his program has so few people, because, I mean, given the demand, I would imagine that they should have had like hundreds. And I'm sure it's probably resources, yeah. But I know given the demands, they would, I mean, it's just, I cannot imagine that there are so many people who are not interested in it. I mean, I think the work you do is incredible. And there are many people who probably wouldn't have that opportunity. And I'm wondering if you partner with your local library or librarians as a form, as another part of resource, and if you do, how is that relationship?
Thank you for your remarks. we do work with other stakeholders like libraries and stuff, but you know how politicized other institutions they are. So you're having a relationship with this institution or this stakeholder, and then having their own politics, and then their relationship becomes ineffective. Or there are other people, they just become gatekeepers. You know, they don't want with the resources that belongs to the community, you know. So one of the reasons why we have like this small number of learners because of their resources. First of all, we only had one classroom, and that classroom was half classroom, half office, half library. Can you imagine? Like, it's just a small space. It's our office desk there with our computers, and then you've got here the library with books, and then you've got the desk here, which can only accommodate 15 learners. And imagine a day last year, we had like an average of 25 learners attendance every day. So other learners will have to squeeze, you know. But this year, we are operating at a school. So I spoke with the principal, and the principal was generous enough to give us another classroom. You understand? So we only have like an office space, an office which is an office and a library, and then one classroom. So we don't have resources. So we cannot accommodate other learners. You know, not that there are no infrastructures that can be used for such programs, but there are people who are gatekeepers of such programs, or people who like, if let's say there's this kind of program, you know, corrupt people, they want some money, and okay, you want to use the space, then how much are we going to get and stuff? Whereas this, the space or this resource belongs to the government or belongs to people, to be specific. Yeah. And on what you're saying, it's true that the VC is really trying to make sure that there is an access for formerly disadvantaged schools, learners to get into Rhodes, like which is a higher learning institution. But without being political, but I think that is on the media, you know. Then when you go back, you know, when you go to the ground, I mean, I'm on the ground. I was a Rhodes student, and so I know what's happening on the ground. You find that is not what is happening, you know. Even those that I have access, they have access because, I mean, my mother works there, or I know someone who studies there, so then that person can actually link me to the relevant people so that I can get in. So there's no like that robust program whereby it says if you did very well, then automatically you get in the higher learning institution as a black child without money or without funds. So, but I'm hoping that one day that will be reality, that will be what is happening on the ground. So we, as the organization then now, we are there to try and open those locked doors, try and negotiate with those gatekeepers. Of course, with competent board members like Ms. Osborne, then, We are really trying so hard to, and with our hardworking director, Mr. Toriano Jason, then we're really, really trying to break those boundaries and make sure that our learners, they get to those higher learning institutions, irregardless of the background, money, the race, or a social class. But it's a mountain to climb. Hence, we need help from everyone that might be able to assist, you know, be it negotiate, you know, the access, or any help that might be offered and might be of help to us as the organization.
I have a question. So you talked about how education is the biggest issue that you're facing right now, especially, you know, even just the born pre-generation, but I'm sure other generations as well. Are there other issues that you're facing that as a community, as a country, that you'd like to talk about also?
Yes. Without being political, the country is in transition stage or transition phase. You know, from apartheid to democracy, they say it's like it's been 25 years into democracy, and then, yeah, so much has been done. but there is so much that needs to be done. At the moment, what I can say as a born free, I'm speaking from a born free perspective, we are liberated politically. Politically, I can clap hands and give 1,000%. We are liberated. But when it comes to the economical, the means of productions are still in the hands of minority. Bear in mind, the minority is 20%, owning 80% of the means of production. And then you get 80% that is owning nothing. Because even now, we've got this land debate that is taking place, of which the President Trump commented on. I don't want to dwell on that. It's a topic for another day. What is happening is that you get 20% of white people. They are owning 80% of the land in South Africa. And then you get 80% of the black majority owning less than 20%, because the government owns plus minus 15 or 13, and then the few individuals, then they share that 7 or 8 a percentage of land. So then that tells you clearly that in terms of economically, we are not liberated. We haven't seen democracy yet in terms of economy, but politically, we are liberated. I mean, we are voting on the 8th of May, and then I can open my political party, I can speak, if you know Julius Malema. So you know that politically, we are not censored, we are free. But economically, so now, hence I'm saying, if answering the question that Honorable Sir asked earlier, if there can be a new leader that can emerge, if that leader then can tackle the issue of education, when tackling the issue of education, not tackling the issue of education only through the monetary, like the bursaries and the scholarship, you know? Firstly, the content, you know, that is taught, it has to be changed. You know, it has to be decolonized. Secondly, the access to higher learning institutions. There has to be access to higher learning institutions, because we believe that if these higher learning institutions can allow the black majority to study them so that they can acquire skills that they will use to liberate themselves, to change their economic situation. You can imagine having 20% owning 80%, having 80% owning less than 20%. The socio-economical issues that emerge from that setting. So you can imagine. So economical issues is really one of the problems, and it can only be addressed through education. You understand? Our current president has been going around the world fundraising, raising billions. Honestly speaking, personally, I don't think those billions will do anything, because those billions will land in the hands of people who want to serve themselves, who don't care about the community, people who only care about themselves. You understand? But having programs and organizations like Inkululeko and other charitable organizations that equip and empower the next generation, so that the next generation can have access to higher learning institutions, the higher learning institutions that will equip them so that they can change the economic status of the country, then that will be great. I still hope and pray for such day to come.
Welcome. This is a comment. There's a gentleman, a young gentleman in Syracuse who's lived here about 15 years. His name is Kofi Adai. He is very involved and has created an organization called Pace Ghana. He's a Ghanaian. And they do some of the same things that you're doing. Yes. Kofi started a library in his community in Ghana, which has thrived to bring the children in. He has been involved in building a school there. And while you're here, it might be worthwhile to share each other's experience. Just a thought.
Thank you so much.
Please join me in thanking Zuko for coming to speak with us today.